What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We are live on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, of course, for all your job and needs. Kick. We're back on Kick this week.
Yes!
Huge. Instagram, huge Twitch. News. Shout out to everybody there. Or maybe you're listening later wherever you get your podcasts. If so, you can get ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do at patreon.com/comicbookclub. And folks, very excited about this week's show.
We got some fun coming your way.
Yeah. We do.
Yeah, we do.
It sounded sarcastic when you said.
No, I can't tell the difference anymore. It's all the same. There's sarcasm and there's reality. We're all wearing red, though, and that means something.
It does. You'll find out what it means in a second because we have the
Riley Train. Oh, sorry.
Nope. Hold on. We have the excellent team from the new run on The Flash from DC Comics that is kicking off tomorrow with issue number 31. Ladies and gentlemen, Ryan North and Gavin Gidry. Woo-hoo! Gavin, Ryan, hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello. So,
that's it. That's all we wanted to say. Just hello and goodbye. Gavin, we were talking about this a little bit before we got on. Last time we had you on the show, we were down in New Orleans. We were served a, 17-course meal during the course of the podcast, something like that. This is not going to happen this time, unfortunately. But before we kick it off, we do still actually have something from Shift the rest of the day down to New Orleans to give to you guys. Every week on the show, Brett Macris, the chef down at Shift, usually creates a cocktail for us. And this week he created a Flash cocktail. Gavin Gidry and Ryan North are working on the Flash, and all I got was this cocktail. It is gin, Aperol, lemon juice, dry curacao, citric acid for science. Peychaud bitters, club soda, and a lemon wedge. And if you want, you can cut it into a lightning bolt. And everyone will think you're cool.
It's true. It's true.
Yes.
This is amazing.
Yeah. Flash cocktail for you guys. So thank you to Brett for that. And thank you guys for having a book to base a cocktail on. Let's talk about this book. Without spoiling anything, we got a chance to read this. Love what you're doing with the run already. It is a big change for everything that's been going on, and I don't say that dismissively of the previous run, which we also like quite a bit. But, Ryan, I'm curious to hear from you first, just because you have a reputation of being, you have a reputation of being the science guy. Like, you put
you have a reputation
in your stuff.
Right.
The thing that I thought was very interesting about your take on Wally, as people will see when they pick up the book, is Wally is not the science guy. He's not the smartest guy in the
world. He says, I'm not the science guy.
Yeah. So what was it like kind of flipping that from, say, what you've done on, like, Squirrel Girl, what you've done on Fantastic Four, to taking that and twisting that for The Flash?
Not as hard as you might think. often I found really neat sort of balancing acts with both Squirrel Girl, where she was a computer scientist, and Fantastic Four, is I'm trying to work in actual science, but it's in a comic book universe where a lot of things can't quite be reconciled with actual science. And you find ways to work around that, but with Wally and the Speed Force, you just get to lean in and be like, yeah, this is what happens, these are the rules for it, and don't try to reproduce this in a lab, because it's not going to work. So it's not different. It is a little bit different, but it's not foundationally different. It's still a system of rules. Like the Speed Force, I almost said the Speed Force is magic. It's a little bit magic, but it can't do anything. It has restrictions of what you can do with it. So in that way, it's still got a soupçon of science attached to it.
Ooh.
Gavin, for you, you recently just got off of a run on JSA, which I think we talked to you about before you were doing it back in New Orleans.
Yeah.
You obviously like tackled Jay Garrick there. That's a speedster. But what's different about this? What's different about like when you're drawing Wally? What's your take on artistically on speed?
Redhead is different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the only difference.
Yeah, when we were meeting in New Orleans, I had just finished my solo flashback issue, and we were teasing that Jeff had and my editor Andrew and Marquise had reached out to talk about maybe doing another set of flashback things set potentially in a different era. That was before it was going to be a year one thing. So like it's been a while. We've been through some stuff since. With Jay, it was great to kind of get to do a test run on how to handle a lot of the after imagey things and a lot of the showing his speed, because that is such an important thing when working on a book with a speedster, is how you're going to convey that power. And with Flash, with Wally in particular, since I'm not doing a book set in the 40s, I felt more comfortable leaning into some like of my anime and manga influences to show nice. Speed. A lot of smearing and blurred edges, which for an artist like me, where my line work is usually really clean, I've done it on multiple books, but hopefully it doesn't take people out of it too much when now I'm... You can see in the preview pages, the page where he's running with the casserole, that I'm exaggerating his limbs a little bit more and playing with the line work on his feet. And there's moments where he's eating really fast, so it's almost like the animation technique of multiple hands that almost barely look like hands even.
Yeah.
They're just moving so quickly. So getting to play with a lot of what I've learned through animation that I've picked up and my manga influences has been the main approach. Because it's a thing of wanting to stay true to the visual language that pre-exists, but also trying to maybe potentially do it in as new of a way as you could figure out to do it. And unfortunately, when there's 70 years of Flash comics, it's kind of hard to do something in a new way.
Well, and there's often 70 Flashes running around as well. Fair. So like, and that's why I feel like since we got to read this ahead of time, like this feels like lighter, brighter, a little bit more free. It not to like be in the bag already for it, but it feels like I'm running alongside the Flash without having to be paying attention to so many things. And so that was exciting. Is that an intentional shift that you guys are making?
I think so. Sorry, with these preview pages up, I keep thinking how DC released 4 pages of preview, and it seems like the comic's just about casseroles. It's like casseroles. Yeah.
Never write hungry, right?
Yeah. Which is great. I mean, the thing with the Flash is that there are so many speedsters running around, and I don't think it's necessarily easy to tell a Wally West Flash story when there's 8 other fast people running around alongside him. So not that we deny their existence, but it is more of a focus on Wally and his family to sort of minimize the other speedsters we have to focus on our main guy for a bit.
What about working in the whole all in? Is this, I don't think this is branded Next Level, right? Like it's not part of the Next Level initiative. It's just coming in all in Act 2.
All in Act 2, yeah.
Yeah. So what's the directive there?
I don't know what I can say without saying stuff I'm not supposed to say, that it's still secrets.
Yeah, we don't want to get you in trouble.
You're not all in yet, Alex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Never mind then.
No, that's fine. Reasonable question.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about a little bit more about WALL-E then, because like we were showing off the preview pages, like we've been talking about, you've got the whole West family there. So what's it like working with all of them? What is the dynamic there? And not to compare it to something else, but you are doing this right now. What makes it different from Fantastic Four?
I have the pettiest complaint in the world. Not complaint, observation. and it's not really, it's sort of there in Fantastic Four too, but not to the same extent. Comic writers as a group tend to be really bad at naming children.
Really?
So, WALL-E West has a kid named Jay, which shares the name, slightly different spelling, of the other original Flash. He's got Irie, short for Iris, who is another character in the universe. Barry's got the two future twins, Don, D-O-N, and Don, D-A-W-N. These are insane names to name your children.
Almost purposefully, bad at keeping track of people.
Go through their world. So one thing in a book, if I'm writing a book that I'm inventing all the characters from scratch, they will never have the same letters for the first letter of their name. You won't have a WALL-E and a Wade and a Wallace in your book. There will be WALL-E, Jim, and Greg instead. So
the only thing crazier would be to have two characters named WALL-E West in the same universe.
Yeah, or like two characters named Valeria. It's something I had to learn and make a little spreadsheet of all these different names and how they connect to each other and what the duplicates are, because I don't want to get confused.
Ryan likes spreadsheets.
I may have sent Gavin a spreadsheet as part of our third or fourth script together. First time I did this, in my defense, I never sent a script, and then here's an attached spreadsheet to explain how one of these spreads is going to work. But I have no regrets, and I'm sure it's going to be amazing.
Can you tell how you use a spreadsheet, just in as a way of organizing your outline or your script?
There's a spread coming up that was complicated enough to explain that I needed a spreadsheet to fully realize it.
Wow. He prefaces the page of the script with, "I promise I'm not crazy." sorry, here's how I think this could work. Boom. It's a similar thing that Ed Brisson had to do with me when we were working on Patrick Todd a few years ago, because we had I think it wasn't a spread, but it was two pages back to back that were 19 panels a page or something crazy like that. And I was like, "Dude, what are you doing?" And he's like, "I promise, we'll make it work." unfortunately, though, he just left it to me to figure out, but it worked. I'm happy with how it came out, but that is always kind of like an ask that you have to, you have to preface it a little bit to not have someone's blood pressure go up.
Yeah, I know I didn't have to. I could have just dumped it in your lap, said, "I don't know, make it work."
Yeah.
I do want to talk about something that I think you did make work really nicely, Gavin. And unless I'm wrong, you did this cover, right? This is the cover to this issue. So for anybody who's listening to the podcast, this is the cover to Flash 31. You got WALL-E and Iris, and he's running her kind of towards the camera. She's holding the camera. They're taking a selfie as they're running super fast. This felt to me like an instantly iconic image when I saw it. I think you don't, we get a lot of covers, and a lot of the covers are very samey, so to see something like this is very striking. So what was your thought process when you were putting this together, Gavin?
Well, first, she actually is a random bystander. I in the process of drawing her, made her not white, and then not thinking that a lot of people are connecting her to Linda, but she's not Linda. She's kind of a young, hipper. Linda looks different in the book. But we talked about it as a concept in general, because we wanted to, so I'm a big fan of story covers. And I want to do something that's both a good image, but also works for the context of the story. Cause I feel like a lot of times nowadays, it's just a fun pinup and that's it. So getting a chance to do A covers is a perfect excuse to get to do the story covers. And with this one, immediately I was like, well, if she's going to be streaming, it gives me a chance to kind of do hearts and lightning bolts and give her a little profile picture. Originally it was going to be a cat with sunglasses drinking boba, but I think our editor was that might be too distracting from the rest of it. But it's a fun character moment, because A, it tells you about the story of it all, where there's people putting themselves in danger with social media, but also it kind of keys you into Wally's character a little bit, because he's got that nervous smile of like going along with it. He's not going to like shoot her down per se, but he's also clearly not super stoked on the situation. Yeah.
I love that smile. I think it's so great.
Yeah. And I'm just a sucker for like a deep background. Whenever you have a character like Spider-Man or Superman or Flash, and you can get vertical and have some sort of deep background, it works for me. It tickles a part of my brain. So trying to achieve that as often as possible on covers, I go for it whenever I can.
I feel like comic books have a hard time with social media specifically. It always feels a little corny. And yet this feels like it just simply hits it. Why does this work so well in showing something like that?
I think same thing with costume design sometimes, where it's just like do just enough without doing too much. Just giving you a spot to comment, giving you like the simple parts of the UI without building out entire branding. That's probably 9 times out of 10 the problem. People will do like a faux branding that just becomes too much. So I think keeping it nice and minimal and clean is probably the smarter approach.
Yeah, that's awesome. I agree, and I find often in superhero comics in particular, when they have a tech company that is not quite the right tech company, like it's TalkTick or whatever, instead of tech company, it just takes me right out, because I'm like,
yeah, it's an eye rolly thing.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. Pineapple. You're like,
ugh. Well, Brian, you've done, unless I'm misremembering, you've done like opening pages that have social media feeds on them, I think. It's
yes, Squirrel had Twitter style recap pages that were actually posted on Twitter, but we didn't call it like whatever.
You want to call it X or something like that.
Something insane.
We stole the style, but we didn't do a knockoff name. I mean, it's just the name. When you put that in, it just suddenly feels like, you know, it's not Wikipedia, it's Quickipedia. And it's like,
you went out of your way to name it this, huh? It just, yeah, you're feeling
that's a personal taste thing. Like, there's no objective truth to either of them. It's just I don't like it, so I try to not do it.
No, I mean, I think to back you up a little bit, it definitely does take me out every time. Like, sometimes if it's a very funny name, I guess it works, but most of the time it does feel like you're trying a little too hard, and this is not to slag anybody off, but like, comic book writers are good at writing comic books. Oftentimes, you know, I have a journalism background. Whenever I see an article, I'm like, they wouldn't write it like that. That's not an article.
Where's your inverted pyramid? What are you doing here? Yeah.
So, you know, stick to what you're good at, comic book writers.
Wow. Oh,
yeah.
Take it down a notch.
We do have a couple of questions here from YouTube I wanted to bring up. This is from Absolute Jump Canian. Callan, I'm sorry, I mangled your name. Do you have plans to play around with Jay West's unique powers?
Well, they're not in the outline, but as Gavin can say, the outline is sort of a direction of where we're going, but I added stuff. We add stuff in as we go. There was not Gorilla Grodd in the outline, but he's definitely in the book. So there is definitely potential there. I would like to spend time with the kids, and he does have very interesting powers, so maybe cool. We haven't read them all yet.
Nice.
This is from Peck X4Y. Is there any way that John Fox, aka the best Flash, shows up?
Oh,
shaking his head.
Well, I've seen these. I can't help but involve myself in the online discourse around books that I'm involved in, and boy has this question been asked a number of times.
Really?
By people. Or not necessarily directly to me, just people wandering, you know, out into the void, like, I wonder, like on Reddit or something, I hope they do this. And it's kind of like, well, like that name has come up a number of times. I don't know if it's always been couched as him being the best Flash, but people seem to have strong opinions about their favorite Flashes anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, yeah.
We got another one here. I think we kind of answered this already, but if you want to extrapolate it all, Ryan D. Holier says, will there be science in the Flash book?
Will there be flashbacks is what I'm hearing. in the Flash book. I was going to say probably more than you expect, but I don't know how much you would expect given me and Flash. There is some. There is... Well, you tell me, Gavin, how much do we have in there?
Well, I feel like really early on, we have a really good example in the second issue where with Wally, it's not so much that he has an ingrown knowledge of how to do things based on his knowledge of science, but he tries things. So you're still getting science in the simple fact of he kind of like is using a layperson's logic to work through super science. So we definitely have moments of him like, oh, I'm in a predicament now. Maybe I can try this with the Speed Force and see what happens. And then we also are, you know, introducing our own weird principles.
Nice. So Wally's going to learn. This is an education book for Wally himself.
He's learning some stuff, yeah.
That's great.
I have a question off of this, Ryan, that I've always been curious about with your books, because you do throw so many different concepts in there, and sometimes they're, you know, very clearly like fantasy sci-fi concepts, but you're also dealing with real science often at the same time. What else do you read? What are you researching? Like, what are you regularly checking out that you're pulling on?
I love this legend that I'm just like such a smart man.
Well, here's the thing, is that you're writing a lot of done and won adventures. Like, often people will come up with,
those
like...
Those aren't the actions of a smart man.
But people are like, I have a big sci-fi idea, and then I'm going to do it over six issues. You're hitting it almost every single issue, every single time. So it could just be coming off the top of the dome, but I imagine at the very least, like, you're doing some reading. You're doing some research.
Yeah, yes.
I feel like I'm really holding you to the fire here.
Yeah, well, I feel like...
Yeah, I read, Alex.
It's like your preceding reputation is one of science. Mine is usually one of food. So I don't know which way you'd rather it go.
What a great partnership, science and food.
I feel like reading is probably close to like passwords and pornography in that... We all think we do it the normal way, the normal amount. I don't really discuss it with others, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yes. Ryan, I see books behind you. You can't lie to me.
Now you're really shaking up your reputation with all this pornographic talk, Ryan.
I've got books, too.
Yeah.
Other ones. Gundam books and Asadora manga.
10 other bookshelves going off in that direction.
Well, I mean, to me, it doesn't feel... It feels like it's an extension of, what we're saying about Fantastic Four versus Flash. Fantastic Four is like them being like, look, science is our tool. Yes. And with Flash, it feels like other people are going to be like, hey, man, you ever thought of doing this with your very physics-based powers? Maybe you should give this a shot. So you're, like, coming and going in that way.
Yeah, that's kind of the fun of Wally not being a scientist, is that he's a clever man, but it's not his area of expertise. And I think one of the joys of telling stories with science, for me at least, is getting to see people figure things out. Like the not to mention pornography again, but like the competency porn of smart people doing a job well. And that's kind of been part of superhero comics in the beginning. Like, it's a power fantasy, but also the power of being good at what you do is part of it. And it's really satisfying to see someone who is good at what they do doing their job well, for me at least.
Do you get pitched a lot of science?
My job is so much easier. People are like, hey, Ryan, it's a cool thing. You should write a story about it. And I'd say, thanks. I mean, to answer the question you've sort of asked me three times I've dodged around, I do have a... a text file of stuff I've been trying to get to work, whether it's idea or a concept. There's one I've been trying to get to work for Fantastic Four for like a year, and then I tried to make it work in Lower Decks, and I couldn't crack it there either. If I ever get it to work, you'll see it in a comic, but it's more of having a bunch of tiny irons in the fire than anything else.
Okay. Cool. Here's another one. You can feel free to answer this however you want. I assume the number one is going to be Wally, but what are your three favorite members of the Flash family?
Mm. Wally West, Gorilla Grodd.
Captain Cold. Nice.
I think family, it's a big family. But what is family but a bunch of people you see all the time and maybe don't necessarily like. What are you guys,
Gavin? You got some choices.
I mean, I would have to say Wally and Linda as top two. For that third one, the third one's really tough. Obviously, I've spent some time with Jay, but I feel like going with another Flash might not be, it might be a little bit of a cop out. But also going with Gorilla Garage feels like a little bit of a cop out. specifically following. But I mean, we just did an interview with Owen for Owen Likes Comics, and we both were like, yeah, Gorilla Grodd and Captain Cold are like right up there for us. But yeah, so I guess I'll round out third with Captain Cold. I mean, with the Gorilla Grodd. But for me, like, I'm really, really enjoying, I'm a wife guy. So I'm really enjoying the Wally Linda of it all. I've been married almost 14 years. I've known my wife.
I thought you were going to say, I haven't married
20
times. Total
wife. Yeah. I love getting married.
I've known my wife 25 years. So like part of what I'm enjoying so much with this book is the slice of life dad and husband of it all on top of the superhero comic stuff.
Yeah, me too. Hmm. It's that that lived-in relationship where like they know each other so well that they don't have to be lovey-dovey all the time. They can tease each other. They can make fun of each other. It's such a... I'm also a wife guy. I've been married once, but I'm so far pretty good at it.
Guys, it's not a competition.
Yeah.
You guys can't both be wife.
Okay, real quick.
You're harnessing the wife force right now to...
Name your three favorite wives. Let's
go. Mine, Gavin's, and mine
nice.
There's a world of opportunity out there. Beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion, and meet challenges head on. And the love part? Comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries. Learn about benefits and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Prenuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Prenuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Kevin, it is interesting to hear you say that you're enjoying that aspect, because one would imagine from my very outside perspective as a non-artist that you'd be like, I like drawing superhero fights or going to Gorilla City or things like that. But it sounds like what you're actually enjoying is the character moments, the acting. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. The big splashy superhero fun is a lot of fun to draw. But I mean, I also... You know, to get into comics, you tend to have to spend a lot of time in indie books anyway. So you spend a lot of time working those muscles. And also as a fan of film and TV, I don't get bored by talking head scenes at all. I think that there is a certain skill to doing them in a nuanced way that still feels like they're not super, super static. I'm not like jumping all over the place with the camera, but I am trying to be... not super stuck in one spot, and I do have a lot of fun of blocking out scenes and trying to consistently tell a story through a scene with multiple characters. And thankfully, I have a lot of experience with it because I've done more team books than I meant to so far, and team books that have ended up with like insanely large teams. Because by the time I was done with Birds of Prey, we had 13 characters, and by the time we were done with JSA Year One, there's a ton of characters in that final issue, JSA members and JSA adjacent members. It's a lot. So I do enjoy it, but also I'm a huge fan of slice of life stories with anime and manga in particular. Like, I'm a big fan of those romance and slice of life stories as much as I am on, you know, the Shonen battle stuff or Superman punching out Darkseid. I also like in Action Comics, Willow had a nice scene of him like hugging on to Lois, and I was like, yeah, this is I dig this a lot too. But also punching you know, polar bears in the Arctic. It's also fun.
The acting in this book is so good. What Gavin's been doing with like
that is my favorite part.
The conversation is great.
That is my favorite part of comics is drawing people, and part of that is of course expressions and you know, doing the acting part of it.
Well, I mean, you were kind of joking about the preview pages being all about casseroles, Ryan, but having read the whole book, I think it really does a nice job of setting it up because it recenters you with this family, with this character, sets the tone for the book. You go and have some crazy stuff that happens after that, but you got to have that. Like, you got to care about the characters or else you're not going to care about the punching.
100%. I mean, that was a lesson I learned when I was trying to write Fantastic Four, where I sat down to write the first issue and I was like, this can't be done. I can't get Betty to care about a team with 9 people on it in 20 pages. Like, it doesn't work. Oh, wow. You have to split them up and care about them individually. So we didn't do that here, but just, you need, I thought there's no way this book is going to work unless we take the time at the start to make you care about who these people are, about Wally and Linda and their kids. And then we can tell a story. But first, let's love them and then see what happens next.
This is from Stray Bullet. What do they think of the Absolute Flash currently happening? Feel free to say how you really feel about it.
Wow.
First of all, if you want to slam it, feel free to go ahead. But I am curious because, like, obviously you're doing a completely different universe, but it's also not a closed ecosystem. As writers, these things impact each other. So is there anything that you look at Absolute Flash and you're like, oh, we could tweak this a little bit, or are they very much their own things?
I mean, in my mind, I feel like they should be separate things because it's a flavor that we've already got, right? Like if you like cherry, you don't need a second cherry flavor. You want mint chocolate chip to differentiate from that. So my intent is to make them feel like different things just because that's what I would want as a reader is different Flash books. I want 2 Flash books. Let's make them not the same thing.
Yeah, and I feel like sort of on the last 2 things you've been saying here, what's so nice about getting to meet the family is the problems that Flash is facing, at least in this first issue, aren't in his family. Like, I feel like there's so many books where it's like, everything's going great, except for this one member of the family is about to do something horrible, or something horrible is about to happen to him or them. And like in Absolute Flash, it's a darker universe. There's bad things happening all the time. And this feels almost in reaction to it.
Yeah. Well, the one man day of it all of like, you know, there's a certain thought process that like, unless there's drama in the relationship, then the relationship doesn't serve a good story function. And I hate that you have to like constantly keep breaking relationships up. I don't agree with that at all. So I think, you know, we're hopefully, Ryan knows better than I do. Hopefully that's not necessarily going to be the source of drama at any point. There might be little moments of things that pop up because of course there's always conflict. I annoy my wife on a regular basis. For her, it's conflict. For me, it's fun. but you know, you're not going to have like the stakes get raised purely based on some sort of friction between them because they're a working functioning relationship that's really healthy. And they love each other a lot and they get each other and it goes a long way to, Linda in particular being a support structure for Wally as a person.
Couldn't agree more, and I feel like a lot of times when you do inject this false drama into a relationship like that, it doesn't work because it feels false. You're like, these 2 people have been great up to 2 minutes ago. Like, why?
All right, why is this the thing that blows it up? Like, where is this coming from? Yeah.
Well, especially when it gets down to it in superhero comics, like, well, someone's going to die if they don't get over this fight. And it's like, well, I right. feel like they would. My wife and I have an argument because the stakes are much lower around my household.
Right, it should put the argument into perspective pretty easily whenever there's, like, the world on fire outside the window.
Yeah, exactly.
This is from Holland FJ. Question for Ryan. Any thoughts on an emotionally devastating Jeff origin story after doing crypto?
So I need to say that I do not expect crypto to be as emotionally devastating as it was. For those who haven't read it, it's the origin story of Superman's dog, Crypto the Superdog. And there's some sad stuff that happens to him.
It's how it happens.
I knew I was in trouble after the first issue dropped, and it's just his origin. He starts in Krypton, ends up on Earth, little lost dog in a strange alien world called Earth. And people were telling me, like, Ryan, I cried. That was the poor dog all by himself. And I was like, I'm in trouble because I didn't need to cry. And what I realized is when you have a cute animal protagonist, we treated Krypto like a dog. He didn't have thought balloons. He just acted like a dog would. When you have an animal as your protagonist, people, you don't have to do the work to make people like him. Like, the animal's instantly liked at 100.
Immediately. Yeah.
Yeah. So I maybe didn't realize that right off the bat. That said, Jeff is also a very cute animal, land shark, and I could absolutely break your heart.
Wow. What a threat to drop
For Krypto, DC also did a great job of putting Mike Norton on that book. That's like the perfect casting, because he is like the dog guy. I've known Mike for decades now, and his love of animals is like second to none. So I think that was such a smart decision on their part to get an artist who really knows and understands and can sell the dog of it all.
And talking about acting, like the dog acting in that book could only have been done by Mike. Like he 100% captured a actual dog going through this stuff.
I've done a lot of dog acting in my theater background, so I get it. It's hard.
Yeah, we heard the dog earlier, man.
Exactly.
No, that was him. He was throwing his voice.
Yeah, throwing his voice. There you go.
My dog acting.
It's Ryan, important to be versatile.
You got it. I'm a triple threat, specifically dogs, cats, and fish.
There you go.
If I remember correctly, Ryan, you did, I think it was on the third issue of Krypto, there was a content warning where you're like, hey, you're going to cry. Don't worry about it. Did you add that after you saw the reaction to the first issue?
We may have discussed it earlier.
Okay.
We weren't completely naive that people would be upset when you're seeing an animal suffer. But after that first issue, I was like, we should do this because it does have a happy ending. Sorry, this has a happy ending, but a dog in a cage being mistreated by Lex Luthor hits harder than when Superman's in a cage getting punched by Lex Luthor.
No question.
From Amber Love, do you have any tattoos of characters you worked on?
I've thought about how to do it. So I have a few tattoos, but they're all words. As an artist, it was always hard for me to settle on an image that would be there permanently because I would always nitpick it a little bit. So trying to figure out the character of it all, I've played with the idea of doing symbols, but it would be like, how can I do it in a way that works and feels right? But apparently Ryan has a better answer to that.
Yeah, or he's just taking off his clothes.
Yeah, he's just...
one sleeve at a time.
I have a little heart that's blank, so you can write things in. And in your own handwriting, you can write flash.
There it is.
That's a genius way to do it.
That's so good.
It's a future ready tattoo. I do have a flash tattoo, yes.
Do you do that at every con? And when somebody's like, oh, I don't like flash, I like squirrel girl, you're like, squeak, 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 squeak.
That's just the first time I got it. I do it less than you would expect.
That's great.
This is something we talked about with you the last time, Gavin. Are you still helping with Louisiana authenticity on Uncanny X-Men?
Yeah.
A lot less. Since my time on the book, it slowed down a bit, but a bunch. But every now and then I'll have an email or a text from Gail where she's got like a very specific thing in mind and she wanted to know how to handle it.
Cool.
But I mean, I provided her with a 9-page PDF. So my hope is that becomes kind of like the Gambit Bible that Marvel gives to someone whenever they take the job. So hopefully after Gail leaves, the things that we established really live on.
Wow.
I think I've seen your name in the background a fair amount in Uncanny X-Men.
They did. I know that on like issue 5 or 6, one of the fill-in artists, I think it was probably, it might have been Andre Bresson or Javier. They put Guidry's Grocery. I think it was in, I'm assuming it was in the script, but there's a Guidry's Grocery. And I was like, I'll take it. Cool. Nice. It doesn't really happen in New Orleans as often because Guidry's predominantly went west toward towns like Carancrow or Onaudville or Lafayette, whereas my family went east towards New Orleans. But it's really funny to be driving, like growing up with the name and having it with people in your classes, and then you go to a certain part of the state and all of a sudden it's like buildings named it, streets named it, whatever. Right. It's like, oh, we are the unsuccessful branch of the Guidry family. Cool.
Ryan, I wanted to ask you about, just take a little swerve and ask you about something else you have coming out tomorrow. You wrote, I think it's a 2-pager in the back of Fantastic Four First Foes, which is a little science thing with the MCU version of the Fantastic Four. I know we've kind of already talked about like how you separate the stuff, but what's different about writing the MCU Fantastic Four versus the comic book Fantastic Four?
Mustaches.
Mustaches.
Yeah. A lot of mustache work.
For sure. Yeah, it's a little sort of, I guess I can spoil the comic coming up tomorrow. It's a little science backup of Reed sort of explaining how the science behind some of the inventions and technologies you saw in First Steps actually works. And I did actually have some troubles. I was putting stuff in and they were like, Ryan, you saw the movie, right? Like, this is not in the movie. And I was like, oh, right, sorry, yeah, of course. it was implied that unstable molecules exist in the movie, but we didn't actually mention unstable molecules. Therefore, maybe let's not explore unstable molecules. Let's do something else. So it's fun. I really, I mean, I like the characters a lot. And just having a 2-page backup where it's Reed Richards trying to explain science and it does not go well because the rest of his family messes it up is great.
Classic. And are you going to be doing those? There's 4 specials. I don't know if you can say this yet. Are you going to be doing those for the rest of them or is it just this one?
I've written another one, maybe 3 of them. I know this one I still have yet to write, so there will be more.
Okay.
Cool.
And this is from D. Hollier for Gavin. Will you be on Flash exclusively and not splitting your time with it in JSA? Please say yes.
Thankfully, yes. I was drawing Flash and JSA alongside each other for about 3 months. So, like, we're toward the end of March. I think I've already done 4 full issues of artwork this year. It has been tiresome and it's been a lot. I finished up JSA a few weeks ago, but then I was still kind of on a tighter schedule on this Flash. So now that I just finished one issue of Flash, I'm finally moving on to where I think my schedule can get back to a normal, not quite 9-to-5 weekends off schedule, but much closer to like I can play Pocopia again, you know, and see my family more than in passing. So I'm excited. Nice. And yeah, my plan is to dial it back a little bit. I did 13 shows last year, cons. I'm only going to do maybe 7 or 8 this year. If the airports stay the way they are, probably less. but for right now, yeah, I'm going to stay home and stay on Flash and kind of get to just luxuriate a little bit. Between covers and issues, I'm hoping to just do Flash for the foreseeable future.
That's awesome.
This is for Ryan from Derek Mainhart. Given how One World Under Doom helped lay the groundwork, do you have any involvement in Armageddon? And as a follow-up for me, do you talk to Chip Zdarsky at all? Like, let me show you how it's done, kid.
Yeah, me and Chip text. I mean, we live in the same city. We're friends. We text all the time. For Doom, Armageddon is Chip's baby. That's what he's doing. But I am doing a 10-issue sort of evergreen miniseries with Doom called Doom Quest, where he's going through time and messing things up, which is fun.
Ooh, nice.
It'll be a fun story.
Yeah, and that's not exactly in continuity, right? Like, that's sort of like
it's evergreen. Yeah. So it's like evergreen is a term that I conceive of as, you know, it's 5 minutes ago, the not too distant past. The benefit of it is you're not shackled to continuity, so you can just do stuff and not worry like who's Captain America right now or who's dead or who's in space. So it kind of makes it easy, and the pitch to the publisher is, oh yeah, this'll this will last forever. It's evergreen. You can read this book 20 years from now and it'll be just as relevant today. So I have some complicated thoughts about continuity where I feel like sometimes it's great and it has led some great stories. Even in my own case, I've had some really good stories that came out of continuity restrictions. But sometimes it's nice just to be like, it's fine. You know, Spider-Man's here. He was probably here at some point.
Well, and I'll tell you, having worked on JSA, and like, of course, because like I said, I can't help myself but see what people are saying. There are some fans that are like severe continuity heads.
Yeah.
And like, if the smallest thing isn't exactly like how it was in a comic that came out 40 years ago, they get upset. But like, my take on it is, well, if it's in the comic, it's right for the most part. So like, if we're doing it now, that's the new continuity. So if there's small changes that change, you just kind of got to roll with the punches. Sometimes the edges around that continuity are a little gray. So yeah. Like if Black Canary becomes Black Canary in August versus in May, that's just the way it is now.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting thing, right? The Beast as a concept, continuity, where like the best stories, the ones we all love, stick around and we all agree they happened. And the stories that didn't land as well kind of just disappear and we all just ignore to discuss them again until they do get discussed and someone decides to use something from them. So it's always, I think, always a shifting, malleable thing. And everyone's idea of continuity is different from everyone else's, which is, I read this really neat, building up the legend of Ryan, the super genius, it's really neat research paper on language and how we learn, acquire language. And one of the theories in it was the reason that language develops so quickly, that our slang is different than our parents, et cetera, is that language is not just difficult to learn, it's impossible to learn. And so we never actually learn the full language our parents have. We learn a subset of it with different areas that expanded from discussing with other people that our parents didn't. And so because we're never getting a perfect copy, because it's impossible, it's such a complicated thing, we can't make a perfect copy, we get this different copy that changes very quickly over time. And I feel like that's kind of analogous to how continuity works. We all have different versions we're running around with in our head.
Yeah, and there's so many people that treat continuity like it's a legal matter, where
well,
it's actually
like,
we
I
need to,
get that.
And there is fun to that. But you're right; it's a shifting window that it's way more fun to ride the window than.
Well, I always just approach it. Okay, I always just approach it that like if things fit inside the window of the idea of the continuity, then I'm fine with it. If it fits, if it feels like it's in character, fine. If it's things that break the broader aspect of the continuity, that bothers me. But I'm never the one to be like, oh, no, but that company should have been named this because it took another 10 issues before it was changed. And it's like that's always the broad stroke. I work continuity in broad strokes. It's like the essence of it. As long as it's there and it feels right, then it should be okay. I don't ever let myself get bogged down too much in it being gospel truth.
Yeah. As a cool guy, I'm also a Star Trek guy. And the thing I'm a huge continuity guy there, because it's the thing, the joy of Star Trek, which is probably similar to comics, is that when there's an error, you can always fix it by going deeper, right? Like in Star Trek, you can't beam when shields are up. You can't transport through shields. And then there's an episode, Relics, where they beam through the shields. Clearly a mistake. But if you'll recall, Geordi mentioned a shield recycling technique left a millisecond window open on Federation starships. So if that was being employed, you could in fact beam through shields under the right circumstances. So like an apparent error can be solved by just knowing more Star Trek facts.
It's the perfect addiction model for the young fan.
You just
cool
answered.
Guy. Yeah, real cool guy.
That was very cool. Ryan, maybe you answered the question that I was going to ask anyway just now, but given what you're saying about continuity, what was the experience like working on One World Under Doom when you're running a big event like that? A lot of that is continuity, like you're setting the continuity.
Yeah. For that, I've been on the other side of events a lot where like they tell you what's happening and you're trying to tie into it. And the thing I always found challenging was that I'd say, okay, so what's happening precisely this month when I'm telling them? They'd be like, well, we haven't written it yet, so we don't know. But this should be the gist of it. Then I'd have to change things. So for Doom, I wrote that whole event in advance. It was all written. So I'd be like, here's the scripts. Here's almost precisely what's happening. Wow. You can run with that. But for writing it, you kind of had to take the blinders off. Like I knew that I sort of developed this instinctual thing where, like, if I'm writing, let's say, The Flash, I can't destroy the Earth in The Flash because that will affect what Batman's up to.
Sure.
And so you just write stories where Flash doesn't blow up the Earth. I know, sorry. You can blow up the Earth. And
yeah, Gavin's... If you're listening to the podcast, Gavin is erasing a bunch of pages right now. Yeah.
So you get to go bigger, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Awesome. This is, we have another question here from Crispy Cartoons for Ryan. Any plans, hopes for more graphic novels with Erica Henderson?
Yeah, Erica's great. We did Squirrel together. We did the Eisner Award-winning Squirrel Girl and the Eisner Award-winning Danger and Other Unknown Risks last year. So I'd love to be more together. We're pals. We haven't found the chance or the opportunity yet, but I would be shocked if we both went to our graves without having worked together again. I mean, I'd be shocked.
Wow.
Very grim way of looking at it.
Yeah.
This is why I write comics. I think of what I'm saying and make it better.
Start off so positive and sweet, and then, man.
We're all so near death. I hope I work with her again.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, why don't we wrap it back to The Flash then before we let you guys go, because we've talked about a lot of stuff. So, we talked a little bit about the first issue, but what do you want to tease about the arc, if anything? What's coming up on your new run of The Flash? What are you excited for people to see?
I'm going to toss this one to Gavin.
I was going to leave it to you so I don't get in trouble.
Good.
I was trying to dodge that bullet. What we have in Flash is a, we have a bunch of comics that tell stories. So, okay, I can actually answer this. With Fantastic Four, I was doing a bunch of standalone comics. And it was like 90% standalone and 10% ongoing story. With Flash, we do want every issue to sort of be its own thing. That you get a cohesive, satisfying unit of story in every issue. But there is a larger story across 12 issues that is unfolding all the time. So there should be a pretty good sense of momentum and of, oh crap, I can't believe that is happening.
Awesome.
Great.
And for those of you listening to the Comic Book Club podcast, just know we ask hardball questions like, what's your book about?
Yeah. I'm fully prepared to answer it.
Ryan, Gavin, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah. Really did love the first issue. Cannot wait to read the rest of this run. Very excited to see what happens.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Sure.
What was your favorite part?
Great question.
I don't know what we're allowed to spoil. I'll say for the preview pages, I really did enjoy the casserole scene. I thought the bit, and this is out there, but like the bit of him not cooking the casserole the correct way, and then I am spoiling like anybody who hasn't read the preview, but like switching it with a lasagna and then being okay with it. I thought that was a very funny sequence.
Very fun.
I really enjoyed it. And like I said, it set the tone nicely of the book. It got me engaged in it. I want to read about these characters. It also simplified everything really nicely with the whole family, like I was saying earlier, which I'm a huge Flash fan, as you can probably tell from my hat, I guess. But it can get complicated sometimes. There are a lot of speedsters, so bring it back to basics. I was very happy with that approach, personally.
I like the scene when while he's talking to a monstrous villain later on. In the book.
Ooh, that was a good one.
Yes, very fun.
Yeah. Pete, you have anything or are you?
I got nothing. I don't want to spoil anything and get in trouble. The art is sick though, I will say that, and very much enjoying what you've been doing. So thank you for that.
I do want to say that we brought in Adriano Lucas to do colors, and I'm very, very pleased with how he approached the speed stuff, because we didn't really talk about it. We discussed kind of like a palette that I wanted to go with for the overall vibe of the book. Since we wanted to do a brighter, hopeful, bombastic comics, I wanted it to have some bright, saturated colors. But he did a thing where there was almost like the slip printing offset where like that, similar to what Jordy was doing on Birds of Prey, where there's almost like that, the color breaks containment. But he's only doing it in the speed moments, and it sells him. It's so good. It's almost like he's outrunning the printer. It's such a smart little touch. I think it adds to it tremendously. And I think the book, I'm super pleased with how it looks.
Yeah, I'm glad you shouted out that Birds of Prey run, because artistically that was so impressive. So that makes me very excited for this book as well.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you again, guys. Congratulations.
Thanks, guys.
On this.
Yeah, can't wait to read more.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. Take care.
Later.
All right, there we go. Once again, that was Ryan North and Gavin Guidry, and the book is The Flash, number 31, coming out from DC Comics tomorrow. Like we said, it is great. It is fun. Even if you haven't
read it. He really flipped it on us there at the end. He did, right? Oh, like, oh, yeah?
No, I felt so excited.
Before we go, I was like, oh, God.
That's why, Pete, you want to say, hey, why don't you listen to The Stack tomorrow? Ryan.
We'll get into it. We'll give our honest thoughts on it. But yeah, the book's great. Even if you haven't been reading the previous 30 issues, you can jump right in on this one. No problem. It'll get you caught up to speed.
Oh, boy. Wow. The Flash fans really loving it.
Oh, wow. I said like that and Ryan left.
Yeah, exactly. So did 90% of the audience. Alex, I really like the way you put the emphasis on not the pun in that one as well. Like,
wrong I think emphasis it's time you got on the wrong syllable.
Up to speed.
Up to speed.
We're all wrong.
Yes. Everything is wrong, except for moving to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up, and is your audience questions.
Yay.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments, and we will get to it. It could be about absolutely anything. But what are you guys drinking tonight? What's going on? Justin, you're drinking Dog Barks, I believe.
Oh.
Yum, yum. There's some for everyone. I'm drinking Pacifico.
Ooh, yeah. And I'm drinking daytime because my favorite kind of drinking is during the day.
Yeah. Great. This is actually, I want to answer one that came up. We didn't get to ask Gavin this, but this is from some Okie Dude. Is JSA year one over? I believe so at this point. I believe they finished the JSA year one arc and are moving on from there.
Okie Dude.
Okie Dude. This is from Derek Mainhart. Pete, what are those prints on your nerd wall?
The Mainhart? The Derek Mainhart? Oh, man, I love that guy. This one here is the from Murder Falcon. That's why I got the book right next to it. Mm-hmm. And then the Spider. We had this artist on a long time ago. He does these amazing kind of prints. He handed them out to the audience members when we did a live show, and he let me keep a couple, so... my niece and nephew have the same one in their room. So, yeah, man.
It's quite a featured spot on your wall, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like art and artistic expressions. You know, also it's a fun, I think it very much represents Spidey to me. I like this kind of like upside down selfie, you know, just seems bright and cheerful. And I think it captures him well.
You love selfies.
I don't love selfies, but, you know.
Just remember, Pete loves selfies. Anytime you see him, get a selfie with him. He'll
Hey, I love it. With other people, especially if they listen
Those
to
are called
the show.
Otheries. They're called otheries.
Yeah. I love taking selfies with people. It's one of my favorite things to do when we're in a convention and someone comes up and is like, hey, I love the show.
It's true. I've seen it happen. Speaking of stuff that we do, Garrett Overman says, so this story has probably been told before, so forgive my ignorance, but I'd love to know, what is Comic Book Club's origin story? How did y'all meet? What made y'all want to start a podcast, etc.?
Do you remember that far back? It was like 20 years ago.
It all Speaking started when marriage. My sketch group went up against Alex's in a competition.
Oh, yeah!
So the short version
You're lucky
is,
my sketch group wasn't there.
I used to be artistic director of a comedy theater here in New York called The Pit, and I had a couple of like very incredibly vague ideas for shows that I had written down. One of them was
Need to fill spots. You were looking to fill spots.
Yeah. Comic book talk show question mark. I remember writing that down and being like, I don't know what this is. But on subsequent days, I knew Pete through improv stuff from the theater. Justin did sketch stuff sometimes at the theater and also at the UCB across town.
Yes.
But they came in for meetings on different days, and I saw they had Midtown Comics bags. And I was like, do you like comics? And they were like, no, why? What are you talking about?
Yeah. This was, don't look at me, I'm a monster.
Like, legitimately, this was pre-Iron Man, and there was a certain stigma that came with that sort of thing.
Yeah. And there just wasn't as much of it. There's not people weren't walking around with comics bags.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So we ended up sitting down, talking about it, and we were like, yeah, sure, let's try out a show. I had 3 Tuesdays open in December. We kind of worked out a format. We're like, sure, we'll try it. We'll see what happens. Did it. Came back after the holidays, and suddenly the audience was completely packed. I believe that was after the New York Times article, right? Like there was
I remember it a little differently. We had an audience of like comedy fans at first. Yeah. They were like, this is a funny talk show that they're doing about comics, dorks. And then we took a break at one point, and our audience absolutely flipped into
It was after the holidays. I remember it was like the first 3 shows, very fun, very comedy shows. And then, then people are like, we'd like to know your legitimate comic book opinions. And we were like, what do we do?
We were like, uh-oh, I guess we're journalists. And we've been that way ever since.
Yeah, particularly Pete. And anyway, from there, we ended up, because we kind of hit it at the right time with the dawn of the MCU and everything, we started getting hired for comic conventions. We, for a while, worked for this place called Next New Networks for a sub-network they had called Pulp Secret. And we did a bunch of shows over there.
Pulp Secret Report.
To both YouTube and also, no, not Tubi. Oh, my God. What was it? TiVo.
TiVo, yeah.
TiVo, we secretly huge. Yeah.
We secretly had like a 250,000 audience on there that we never knew about.
It was crazy.
It was horrible. And then they were like pulling the plug. I was like, we just found out we have an absolutely massive fan base.
Yes.
I got recognized in Alaska once.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. So we did that around 2011. I knew Chris Hardwick, who was running Nerdist, and they were building up their podcast network. They saw they didn't have a comic book podcast, and I said, hey, we're doing the show live every Tuesday. We could, like, stick a recorder on the board and record it if you want to put that up. And he was like, yeah, sure. And so that's when we started podcasting it. And please don't go back and listen to a lot of those, because they sound
bad. They sound bad.
They sound
but
very
bad. But we're still
doing it.
We've been remarkably unchanged in almost 2 decades.
That's the
decades.
Other thing that we should probably mention. Is
I originally hated Alex right from the word go. And
that morphed at some point. You used to attack Justin, and now you attack me more.
Yeah, that's true. That is fair. Yeah, there was a real shift.
But the funny part is, like, literally that meeting, we were like, I don't know, I guess we could do that. We're still doing that 20 years later. Almost exactly the same format.
Well, we really struck gold there. And we are committed to it. We're wife guys for this podcast.
A couple of other questions here you can throw in there. Schreikler says, what are your favorite branches of science?
Ooh, interesting. I was a chemistry major when I went to college, so what? I would do that. I never did not. Like, don't worry, I graduated.
That's what you told the ladies, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I failed out of that. I shifted.
You went
to
from
theater.
Science to classically trained.
That's correct. Wow, I could be listening to this podcast in a lab.
I
was originally going to go to college for theater and math, but then. When I got there, I was like, I don't want to do math.
Yeah, it was the same with chemistry. I was like, this is all balancing equations. Yuck.
Pablo says, have you seen the Moana trailer? Why is The Rock wearing a wig?
Pablo, what's
very
up,
very specific question from our guy Pablo.
Yeah. Right? Apparently, I actually have an answer to that question. Apparently, they were going to try to AI deepfake The Rock onto somebody else's body, and then there was a huge outcry against that. They're like, okay, we'll just get the
Rock.
Well,
he's so huge, you could tell if it's a different body.
Right.
You know
so they put The Rock into a wig that Weird Al posted about and was like, hey, we are not auditioning people for the Weird Al story anymore. We already filmed that movie. And the other thing that people pointed out that's real weird is they removed The Rock's nipples. Like, he's topless in it, but they, like, plasticed over his nipples. So he just
I requested that.
Smart.
It was like,
smart. Well, you want to have the Batman suit all over again. You know what I mean?
No, the thing that's confusing about it is, like, one of the iconic scenes of the original live-action Moana is when Moana milks him. Like, how is she going to milk him? How is she going to milk Maui?
Yeah.
I've got.
How's she gonna milk Maui? That's on the DVD of the Moana movie, quoting Alex Albin. Oh,
that's crazy. Yeah. Huh. Weird quote. Easy Reader says, "Any of you going to C2E2?"
No, I wish.
Yeah,
I wish.
Shouts great out con. Though. Great con. Yeah,
oh, great con. Man. I haven't been there in years. Also, I would not want to be flying to C2E2 this weekend. That's just me.
Nice drive. Let's drive.
Yeah, let's just drive it.
Let's hop
Pete,
in the car.
Fire up your snowmobile or whatever you drive.
You got it, buddy.
Straight Bullet question says, question for Justin from Brooklyn. He wants to know why you have his name on your shirt, if you could quickly explain.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. I'm selling a lot of merch for Brooklyn, the New Orleans human up here in New York.
That's it's my favorite really Brooklyn, popular. By the way, yeah. is the yeah. New Orleans human.
Yeah. It's really popular. It's really I'm selling a ton of it. I'll cut him in.
I believe our baseball team is called the New Orleans Humans. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so. Did you say our baseball team?
Our baseball team. That we're on.
Yes, definitely. That we're on. We're really good.
Isn't there a member of the Gargoyles is also named Brooklyn? I know there's Bronx, but I think there was also yes. Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
A lot of
Queens
Brooklyn.
And whatever. I don't know.
Very popular name.
Fred Destrees says, how's the hype for Daredevil?
Dude, so hype. So hype. Alex, I can't believe I have to do this show and not be watching it right now. It's unbelievable. I should be pre-gaming and ready for the premiere.
What do you pre-game for Daredevil?
Oh, man. You know, you just poke out your eyes and start drinking.
Wow.
Yikes.
Great. How are you feeling? What's your hype?
Have you already seen it?
Yes, I've seen the entire season. Justin.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I've seen the whole season.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. It's amazing, Pete. You're still surprised every time when he's
fucking A. That sucks, man.
Yeah, you knew that,
but,
though.
But if you were in Alex's position, Pete, wouldn't you want, you'd watch it?
Yeah. Yeah, I would.
Yes. Okay. I need to watch it so that I could hopefully pitch some coverage around and get paid because that's my job. And, there you go.
That's really good. And Alex, do you want to say your opinion to Pete right here?
Sure, Pete. No, I'm gonna look you in the face. And do you want to take off your headphones? I'll say my quick opinion on it because the review embargo at this point breaks in 55 minutes as we're taping. I thought it was just okay.
Wow, people are, the hype is so big and you're just dumping buckets of cold water.
Like, I thought the first season was great. I thought it was really good and I was incredibly hyped going into this season. And I watched the first episode. I was like, oh, that was kind of a drag. All right. Well, that's fine. But it's fine. Like, I like these characters. It'll get it back on track. And it does not until, without spoiling anything, the finale is great. Like, the finale, the last episode is excellent. That's everything that I wanted out of the season. But the thing that's frustrating about it is it feels like they went back to that streaming pace from the worst of, like, the Netflix era, where it's like, okay, we're going to, like, spin our wheels for 7 episodes and then hit you with that finale. And I'm like, yeah, you did. You did a good job there. But, like, the good thing about the first season was not every episode 100% worked, but, like, they were, like, really pummeling home every episode with themes and the ideas and the shooting and everything. So, a little bummed out.
It's crazy to know that if Pete had heard the words you just said, he would smash all of the boxes in his room and his laptop, and that would be it. That would be it. We just talked about our legacy. We could have ended it if Pete heard the last
100%.
90 seconds of this.
And I'll tell you what, we do a podcast called the Marvel Vision where we talk about Marvel stuff. I'm going to predict it's going to be a very pleasant 8 episodes.
Just a calm hang.
Calm chat.
Well, I look forward. I haven't watched any of it. I'm excited to see it.
There you go. Pete, you can put your headphones back on now if you want.
Yeah.
Jesus, Pete, it is brutal waiting for you to do the fucking cans thing. You did this a lot.
What were you doing?
I'm hoping this means it was so awesome.
And I loved
every episode.
I loved this
phenomenal show.
Yeah. Show is good.
I'm jerking off of like very thin penis. What? That's what it feels like.
Man, I'm in trouble.
Pete, don't ever listen to what we just did here.
Don't worry.
Great. Well, hopefully everybody else is hyped. This is from Stanley House, Justin's solo
parenting. Yeah!
Does he How you doing? Help.
It's Stanley. What a time to, what a topical question. It's I said to the guys before we started, this is I'm right on the edge of end of the rope. I'm really floating here. So thank you for asking, and everything's fine.
You need me to drive up and help you? Are you all right?
So solo parenting is just okay, to quote a lot of my favorite
Should I
people.
Take off my headphones?
Should I take off my children?
Yes, I think so. By the way, I wanted to read this. This is a nice comment from Fred DeStreese. I found the podcast the day WandaVision came out, and now I watch every stack, even though I rarely buy current comics. Fred, thank you so much. That is very
Hey,
nice
what's up, Fred?
That's such a lovely compliment to us, because you don't know what we're talking about. So we must be really entertaining, or at least decent enough storytellers to get across.
Or a good white noise machine.
Yeah, exactly. Just have us on the background. You know what I mean?
And this is also not a question, but Tabardar says, ha, WonderCon is also this weekend, which is true. And that's crazy that WonderCon and C2E2 are happening the
same
week.
Weekend, and isn't
it? And Mocha. Mocha. Yeah. Amber Love says Mocha is this
weekend,
too.
Yeah. That's a lot.
What a weekend.
Big weekend, yeah.
I have a question. We haven't talked about this. We haven't talked about the Spider-Man trailer.
Oh, yeah. We have not.
Did you guys
watch it? I did see this.
Oh, did you just bring this up, Pete, because you didn't want to talk about the Spider-Man trailer? Yeah. This is Fred says, we can talk about that in a second. What did you think about the Spider-Man trailer, Justin?
I liked it. I mean, the Spider-Man movies have been very good. I'm a little... The territory is a little the other storyline, mm-hmm. and Ezekiel and all that. I know, Alex, you famously don't like that storyline.
No, I really don't like the other storyline. I don't like the Moreland stuff or the Ezekiel stuff or anything like that. But here's what I do think they're doing, just based on the trailer, is it seems like, with the exception of whoever Sadie Sink is playing, which there's a lot of rumors out there, which we can get into or not, but it seems like everything they're playing off of is that Peter Parker is Spider-Man full-time. He's leading into his Spider-Man side. And so they're probably not adapting the other so much as, like, he is becoming a Spider-Man. Like, he is becoming a monster. So you have the Hulk in there. So a character who knows a lot about being a monster. You have the Punisher, who is always walking the line between, I'm doing justice, but in the most monstrous ways. You have all of these, like, pressures on him from the outside. So if it does, it's going to be a difficult balancing act to get all of those things working together. But everything that I've seen theme-wise makes a lot of sense and seems pretty cool to me.
Yeah.
I'm so fucking nervous about this goddamn... If this movie doesn't start and the first thing Spider-Man does and do, walk in that fucking donut shop and be like, hey...
Give me a donut.
You are the love of my life, and that necklace that you are wearing is I gave it to you.
That's the entire movie. That's the movie. That's the whole movie, Pete.
I can guarantee you it's not the first thing that's going to happen.
I can't do... dude, I don't like them apart. It doesn't make any fucking sense. For Christ's sakes. It's so dumb. He promised her at the end of the fucking movie, don't worry, I'll come get you. It'll be fine. We'll figure it out. And then he fucking ignores her. It's ridiculous.
I'm going to email you a play called Romeo and Juliet, Pete. You should check it out. It is the exact antidote you need to this feeling.
You did bring this up earlier. Did you see the news of the Punisher special, Pete?
Yeah, in our Discord. I was very excited about it. Man alive, you know, let's just, more John Bernthal as the Punisher, please. He is great.
So there wasn't much about it other than it's coming out May 12th and what is it called? Punisher Last Kill Ever, something like that. I don't know. Whatever it is, it seems like it's adapting the Mod Nucci story by Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon.
That's a great story.
Great story. And I think it's a great fucking story. It's wild to go from like, I'm hesitating to say something that is like a non-spoiler, but like it's wild to go from, clearly it's this like grizzled bearded.
Wait, have you already seen the fucking Punisher special?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's not that. yet. Done yet.
It's all I'm saying is it's crazy to go from him being like, clearly they're going for like, this is a broken man who's ready to kill anybody, to be like, I'm hanging out with Spider-Man now in the hall.
Well, pew, 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 pew. That's what I was going to say. For this to come out in May and then Spider-Man comes out like the end of July, right? Like,
yeah.
That is this meant to be like, remember the Punisher? Because we're going to see him in Daredevil, I'm assuming, as well.
Let's hope so.
Is the Punisher the
main
character?
Don't shake your head, motherfucker! There's no spoilers, bitch! What the fuck are you doing? You fucking piece of shit! Oh, man, if we were still in the same theater next to each other, I would have to call your wife and be like, I'm sorry.
Would you consider that a spoiler?
Yes.
Something not happening is a spoiler?
You answered the motherfucking question.
Okay.
It actually wasn't a question. We're just talking freely like friends.
And I had bugs on my neck, so that's why I was going like this, making this new thing. Oh, get these bugs off my neck.
I hate you.
The thing is, I don't know. The Punisher as the prime character in the MCU is the most... He's the guy we're seeing a lot of. It's very strange, I'll just say.
I agree with you, except as... Like, this is one of those times where it's hard to separate being a comic book fan from, like, I want to critically step back and look at something. The scene in the trailer of Punisher and Spider-Man and him, like, kicking him out of the truck and being like, go home, Frank! I was like, this is great. This is what I want to see. This is all I want to see. This is very fun. Like, I love street-level Spider-Man. I love Spider-Man. Yeah. In the middle of a gag war, being like, oh my God, this is too many people. What do I do here? That's very fun to me. So,
yeah. Yeah. And to have the Punisher be there in the movie and him and Spider-Man be a counterpoint to him, I love that. To be like, this is a bad way of doing things. To have Spider-Man, like, in a Daredevil like way, be like, I'm right on the edge, like you, Frank. I'm like, I don't.
One bad day.
Yeah. I've seen that. I'm a brand new day away from being you.
You're one brand new day away from being myself. Well, anyway, I guess that is it for your audience questions.
Woo-hoo!
And now, normally, we would move on to trivia.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know, trivia here on our comic book show is about dead celebrities and random movies, right? So we're taking that a step further. In our comic book club Discord, which you can get access to from patreon.com/comicbookclub. It is a lot of fun.
Also, if you love like food porn, you know, Stray Bullies puts a lot of amazing pictures of unbelievable food in there. And it is just glorious.
Well, this ties in very nicely because in the food part of the Discord, we were discussing a trend where people try to eat a piece of pizza in 3 bites. And I posted a couple of videos there, and I thought, like, these videos 100% are bait from a pizza shop where people are taking, like, these tiny little bites and being like, oh, boy, I have a lot of pizza left. What do I do? So we were talking about it at the Discord. I was like, I'll tell you what, instead of trivia this week, if anybody could send me a video of them eating a New York style slice of pepperoni pizza, like they do in the video. And it needs to be like, not a Domino's slice. It needs to be a full, good,
grown up piece. Just so you know, Pete,
don't fucking start, bro. Don't you fucking start, dude. I'm already mad at you for talking shit about my love of pizza, man.
It's almost like a Little Caesar's slice, but a little flatter, a little bigger, like a Boboli pizza shell, but made with like a little more love, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, so I said, okay, anybody who can do that, I will give you the $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. And we got one person to take the challenge. I do want to mention... He ate, I gotta frame this up beforehand, he ate regular slice of pizza, no pepperoni, so that was not the exact challenge. So, I'm going...
Dude, you gonna bust his balls, man?
Hold on. I'm not gonna say whether he did it or not. We're gonna bring up the video of him attempting the challenge. But if he does eat the entire slice of pizza in 3 bites, I'm gonna donate $25 to the charity of his choice. But because it's a plain slice of pizza, if anybody wants to send us a video of them eating a pepperoni slice.
Yes, the gauntlet is thrown.
The gauntlet is thrown. We'll do the $25 for that. And of course, as always, I want to give a shout out, pay tribute with this section of the show to the late, great Scott Adams. All right.
What are we doing? You fucking douchebag. Yes.
That's why you want to just bust my balls one more time.
I mean,
it's before not the last we moved time, on. Pete.
You know, you're a fucking snake, man. We had such a nice discussion before the show started. You're a fucking snake.
Who are you talking to? It could be both of us.
Or are you talking to a snake? Is there a snake on the other side?
I'm talking to you, Alex, and you fucking know I'm talking to you.
I'm talking to you. I'm calling you out, and I'll see you.
I will see you in the ring.
Well, anyway, we got this video here. This is probably not totally conducive to an audio podcast, so what we're going to do is we're going to show it. This is Brett Macris, our own Stray Bullet.
Stray Bullies!
Three-bite piece.
Come on, Stray Bullies! You can
very
do it!
Very applicable to comic books.
Will he do it?
And I think we can talk about it and react to it while it's going, so here we go.
Okay.
You're recording now?
Yes.
How do I look? Do I look?
Hey, that's Brooklyn's voice.
Brooklyn, right there?
Yeah.
Okay. Where Brooklyn
start.
At?
Start! Right.
My name is Brett Macris. I'm doing the Comic Book Club Pizza Challenge. I'm doing a whole slice.
It's good branding.
Three bites.
Oh man, that's a big slice.
Pizza down the street. He's from Brooklyn, and he retired and moved to New Orleans to open a pizza shop, much like Pete will do later in
life. Amber says, "Not with the crust, no way." Well, see, this is, for anybody listening, this is like a legit big slice. Whoa!
Oh man!
I mean.
That's a
gift.
Oh, look at the folding skills. Look at the folding. That's a fresh pie.
It's the calzone technique.
Yeah.
That's smart. This is nobody in the videos we watch.
It's like a log.
That's a very smart way of doing it. It's still a lot of pizza.
And eat. Oh my god.
It's a thick crust. He's got a thick crust.
Yes, that's hard. That's hard.
Oh, look at that rip.
Okay.
Oh man, I don't know if I want him to.
He's got a sizable.
Oh, look at what's left! Oh my god, he's still got a giant bite left.
A big bite.
He has almost like a bread lightsaber size.
But you're gonna have to do it.
I love
a lot of encouragement from his son.
It's like you gotta do it, Dad. Come on.
I don't know if he can do it.
Challenge.
Oh, he's shaking his head. No, he's shaking his head. No,
it's a lot of chewing.
Why is he doing the Joey Chestnut shake? Is what's going on.
Yeah.
Oh no.
That's
good. Yeah, he's done chewing. Oh, he's folded in half.
Ooh,
okay,
great,
that's
fold,
huge.
Fold smart.
He's making a pizza rock.
That's crazy. Oh my god,
is he?
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Is it in there,
Brett?
Is it in there?
Oh no.
Oh shit.
Wow.
Look, my boy, three bites, but
oh,
that
god.
Was.
He looks like a in pain dinosaur.
Say
right
now,
yeah, is what it looks like.
What are you doing?
That looks so not fun.
That's he's hilarious. Brooklyn was—he's like, okay, it's over. I'm going to go play video games.
This was taped yesterday, but he actually is still chewing this pizza slice.
Oh my god!
Please,
this is painful. Oh no, like, dude, don't die. Your family needs you. Yeah. You run an amazing restaurant.
Oh my god.
The pizza challenge. Is weird.
Yeah. Pizza challenge is weird.
Straybo says it was painful.
Oh,
just
man.
To confirm that. And Stanley says you killed
him. <kidding.
laughs> Yeah, oh no. We can't kill him.
When you see someone rise to their rise to the top, it can be painful.
Dead.
Yeah.
He's got to open his mouth in the end.
Yeah. She's right. When she's right, she's right. We got
to
see it.
Know the rules.
Can't vomit it up. There we go.
Okay.
All right.
I'm glad it didn't.
Oh, licking
going back
fingers
for more.
Clean.
Amazing.
All right.
He did it. He did
it.
I
was supposed to get a gift card, but I'm doing it for charity.
Okay.
Okay, that's it. I did it.
Say
yay.
All right. There we go.
Stray Bullies.
Amazing work.
Good work, Brett. You are going to get a $25, not gift card, but donation to the charity of your choice. And for anybody else still out there, if you could eat a full-on New York big old pepperoni slice in three bites, you could get
this.
$25 gift card to Midtown Comics.
Pete, you should try this.
Yeah. Yeah. When this was happening, I had day-old pizza, and it's hard to fold, and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it hurt.
Yeah.
I tried, but it hurt.
Yeah,
I don't hurt you.
That that crust thing at the end, I don't think I could do that. That seems.
But yeah, and plus, you could start with a crust, but right. That would be even harder. I feel like.
Yeah.
You'd have to come at it from either side and do bite, and then whatever cheese goodness is left.
Oh yeah, I guess you could do it like sideways. You could also roll it up all the way, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't want to give tips. I don't want to give away the $25.
Exactly. I honestly think Brett's strategy was excellent.
It was sound, yeah.
Sound.
The fold was money.
Ooh, we have a question here from
you can't. That's not possible. That's not
possible.
Can
Pete eat a garbage plate in 3 bites?
It's not.
Pete eats garbage plates like Pac-Man. He takes the whole thing down.
Yeah.
He throws it in the air.
You were talking to was yourself when you unhinge your jaw and eat a whole garbage plate?
No.
Everyone from Rochester can unhinge for a garbage plate. The GP.
Ra-cha-cha, baby. Come on.
All right.
Snake people.
That was trivia, I guess. But as we all know, new comic books are coming out tomorrow. What are you guys looking forward to? Justin? Yeah.
Great question, Alex Zalbin. A lot of good stuff coming out. I mean, Feral number 21. We talked to Tony Fuse last week.
Oh, yeah, the silent issue.
We got the silent issue. That's very exciting. We've already read Flash number 31. I just want to shout that out. I can say already that that's a great comic that I really enjoyed. And then there's a lot coming out.
Don't take mine.
I have a pretty good thought that I will not take yours. This is one we commonly talk about, but I'm going to go for Department Truth number 36. Jamestown. Ben Templesmith is on art right now, which is really cool from way back. And the topicality of this book feels just so sharp right now, especially given the world around us right now. And so it's making it sort of a great, an even greater read, I think.
Pete, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
Absolute Wonder Woman, of course. Death Fight Forever. Man, if you're looking for like unbelievable 80s art and action, Death Fight Forever. And then The Peril of the Brutal Dark. Zara Kane Mystery number 2. Sick team, sick art. I mean, the tone, the vibe of it alone is just so cool.
Great picks from both of you. I will throw out there.
Oh, thanks, Alex.
Anytime. DC Marvel, Superman, Spider-Man. I'm excited to check that out.
Yeah.
We had Matt Fraction on a while back, and he told us about his Jimmy Con Carnage story, which is Jimmy Olsen and Carnage. Really looking forward to that one, among everything else. I am also very interested to check out Fantastic Four First Foes. Dan Slott and Mark Buckingham seem like a really good pair on that. So curious to see what they do there.
We talked to Dan about that in a podcast as well in the last few weeks, and he was so hyped about that.
Yeah. And, wow, I'm being a real Marvel zombie this week, but I'm going to give a shout-out to Psy Dimensional Rivals. I've really been enjoying that series.
Yeah.
It is Peach Momoko doing an artist jam with folks, sending her version of Psylocke through various different dimensions and stuff. It's been really cool. I was a little dubious about it at first, but it's really sucked me in. It's won me over. So very excited to see what they do in issue 3. And all of those books and many more are going to be in our Stack podcast that debuts Wednesday, 9 a.m. in the Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed. So check that out. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Ryan North and Gavin Guidry for coming on the show. Check out The Flash 31 out tomorrow from DC Comics. Next week on the show, we're keeping the DC love going with Scotty Young is going to be here.
Yeah.
Talk about his new run on Lobo. So that should be a lot of fun.
That's going to be fun.
Dude, very excited.
If it's not? What if it's like dead serious? That would be interesting too. I don't know.
I'm curious. I wanted to explore what it's like to truly be a bastiche.
Comic Book Club News, our daily news show Monday through Friday. You can check that out in its own feed. Podvincible, our Invincible podcast coming out every Wednesday.
Oh, man.
Recapping the Prime Video show. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, as mentioned, is going to be back pretty soon talking about Daredevil.
Plus, we have The Boys coming.
Oh, boy. Oh boys. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and get ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Bye. Good night, folks.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.